Look at him, mama. Can't get along, honey. I really tried to treat you right. Now, when I come in from work, darling, and give you my check, you want to raise sand, fuss, and fight. Get a chance to stay out all night. You left last night at 8, said you're going to the show. Come sliding home at 4. Then you come sliding in this morning soon, just about at 4. Then you drunk, got all my money too. Come here, girl, let me tell you what I'm gonna do to you. I'm gonna cut your head 4 different ways, baby, long, short, deep, and wide. When I get through spreading the rhythm with this rusty black handled razor, you're gonna be mapped out for an Ameland ride. I'm gonna cut A, B, C, D in the top of your head. That'll be treating you nice, sugar, and you ain't gonna be dead. Cut E, F, G right across your face. H, I, J, K, that's where running mountain take place. Cut L, M, N, both your arm, sell your drinking pedal sugar your whole life long. I'm gonna cut O, P, Q. That'll be trouble too, cause I'm gonna grab your mama and turn you every way but loose. Cut R, S, T. They hear you cry. That'll be the last time tears will run from both of your eyes. I'm gonna cut UVW under the bottom of your feet. Last time you walk up and down 25th Street. I'm gonna mark you across the bosom with XYZ. Wanna get through with these alphabets, you quit your messing with me.
Very angry blind Willie McTell right there. Here on the July 17th Brian and Vinny Show. What may be the final ever Brian and Vinny Show, everybody. I know some of you freeloaders will be shocked to hear this.
I'm just quitting. No, that's not it.
I may be quitting life. I'm heading into them woods
the
on Thursday.
The treacherous Cascade Mountains of Washington State.
That's right. I'm going to the Cascades to look for Bigfoot.
Home of mountain peaks, cold weather, high winds, bears, and perhaps Sasquatch.
Really high winds and bears and...
You will have high winds.
Earthquakes?
Probably not an earthquake.
Hmm. Yeah, I'm heading into the Cascades. The folks from the Bigfoot Field Researchers Organization are doing an expedition, and I'm going. And we're going to see what we can see. My buddy Rich, the team leader, I believe we're calling him, and my pal George, three of us are heading up there.
You know, I was going to make fun of you for following Rich as your leader, but of the three options...
Oh, yeah, Rich is
by
far.
That is the way to go.
By far.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not even close. So, I trust in Rich. He grew up in Wenatchee.
That's a good point, too.
Hello.
Yeah.
And George is from Eastern Washington as well, and he's got a big tent.
That's important.
I am the odd man out, I'm not going to lie. But, as I've noted before, these folks did encourage everyone to bring their women and children. So I presume it cannot be that treacherous. Why would you encourage such things if you were going into the abyss? So we're going to look around. We're going to listen into the woods. We're going to hear scary things. I'm going to jump 10 feet in the air like my cats do when the little one runs around. And hopefully, if all goes well, I'll be back on Sunday. But you never know. You never know what happens out there in the woods. We've got a 10:30 appointment tomorrow, Wednesday. We're going to go to Cabela's, which is not a Mexican head store. It's actually a place where you get outdoor stuff.
Have you ever been there?
No. I know there's a big bear out front.
You're going to the new one. I don't know if they all have this, but the one in Chehalis has an enormous collection of stuffed animals. And by stuffed animals, I don't mean teddy bears. I mean animals that have been shot and then stuffed.
Yeah, we're not going to that one.
Yeah.
But the brand new Cabela's in Tulalip, I would presume it's got some stuffed animals. I know they got the big bear. And we've got a tent. I know that. And there's a big list of things that I've got to read to find out what I do and do not have. Long story short, I don't have anything. So we're going to spend tomorrow getting everything that is needed for this 3-day expedition. And hopefully I'll come back with my life and stories.
I have loaded up here the Tulalip Cabela's website. There's a photo of the outside. It's a store. It says Hunting, Fishing, Cabela's. There's a button that says photo gallery. And I click that, and it gives me one picture that is the exact same picture I was just looking at, but bigger.
Yeah?
Yeah. Not much of a gallery.
Not much of a gallery. It's brand new. They haven't put anything in it yet.
I guess not.
So yeah, that's going to be a good time. We still are scheduled to have our normal shows on Wednesday. But then no Bryant-produced shows for minimum 3 days. Maximum forever, depending on how it goes. I'll be back Sunday night with the usual weekend Wrestling Observer Radio. And Dave and I will talk UFC in Calgary as well, which hopefully I'll have seen by then. And we'll see how it goes. I hope to come back, and all I can talk about is the Bigfoot that I saw. Am I expecting that to happen? Probably not. But they claim that the last expedition into this area, they had all sorts of strange things happen. They heard vocalizations of unknown beasts, and they claim they even had nighttime visits.
Was Santa there?
Well, they don't know. They didn't get a photograph. But they've got all of the stuff you see on TV, the night vision goggles and the heat sensors and the parabolic dishes. I'm hoping that Bobo's going to be there, but I'm not getting my hopes up. I realize that sentence made no sense.
I was going to leave it alone.
Just bear with me. And I can't believe I just said bear. Anyway, we're going to go, and it's going to be a fun time, and I'll report back with what there is to see up there. Hopefully, I'll return with both Rich and George. I still feel that George is the weak link. I know he claims that I'm the weak link, but we do both agree that Rich is a strong, powerful leader, so it should be a fun time. So
now, is there a prize for whoever finds Bigfoot first?
Oh, yeah, it's called Money and Enduring Fame. Well, it's found him yet.
That's true.
So we'll see what we can see. So anyway, if you go up onto the website and you don't see any new shows for me for the next 3 days, now you'll know why. Thursday, Friday, and Saturday night, I'll be up in the hills. And apparently there's going to be no way to communicate, no cell phones, nothing's close by.
You're going to lose your mind.
Actually, probably not. My mind will probably be clear. I lose my mind when I'm on the internet. Stay off the internet, things might be good. I'm dreading the return because I'm going to be way behind on everything, but I think, Vinny, I think that a lot of people are underestimating me.
Do you?
Yeah, I really do. I'm going to dominate this trip. I'm going to dominate this trip. You just remember that. So we've got some wrestling as well to talk about here today.
Do we?
And some cats. The little one has been brought downstairs.
Did you finalize the name, by the way?
Well, it's going to call it Skippy, but it's always been the Runt. Mm-hmm. And so everybody has been calling the cat Runty since day one. And it's like a name that we can't get rid of.
I see.
And it's still a Runt. It's a really, really small cat. And the cat has decided that it's in charge. Like when we got, it's actually the exact same thing that happened with Snork and Tiggy. Snork was the existing cat. We brought in Tiggy, who was a baby. And Tiggy was much smaller, but it didn't matter. Within a couple of weeks, she ran this house. Snork had always been the alpha cat. And Tiggy put her in her place. And Snorky became the beta cat. And Tiggy was in charge. So now we brought in this new one. And I expected, okay, you know, little cat. Tiggy's going to put this cat in its place. And Tiggy will remain the alpha. I'm not sure that's going to be the case. This little one is not afraid to fight. And I think part of that is because it was, in fact, the Runt, and it had, how many brothers did it have? Two brothers? Two brothers and a mom, and it had to fight for everything. So now we've introduced it into this house, and it is not afraid to chase and attack both of the larger cats. There's been a fair amount of hissing, and believe me, we've taken our sweet time trying to do this introduction. It is not going as smoothly as it did with Tiggy and Snork. So she's only, this new one, it's actually a he. He's only downstairs for a very limited amount of time before he gets put back in his room again. And it is going to be a long process for them to all be friends. But I am determined to have all of these cats love each other. But right now, this little one's just such a troublemaker. Just chasing cats all over the place, and it's actually Snork that Snork just will run for a little while and then turn around, and she will open her mouth like a snake that's trying to swallow an egg, and she will hiss and spit, and this cat will stop dead in its tracks and tuck its tail and go the other way. And Tiggy has not figured this out yet, or because she's so much smaller, she's not as intimidating as Snork, because she hisses and the little one just keeps coming. And there's been some, you know, there's been any claws or blood or fur flying or anything like that, but there have been some uncomfortable moments that we've had to break up and put the little one away. So, oh boy. This one isn't as easy as the first one. What did you witness today?
A lot of what you just described. It's funny to me because, of course, I saw when Tiggy came in, and Tiggy was the tormentor to poor Snorky, who just wanted to be left alone. Now there's the new cat, the unnamed small one.
The runt.
The runt. And he's picking on Tiggy, so there's total role reversal there. Meanwhile, Snorky just sits off to the side watching.
Yep.
And the ultimate highlight was you have a brown paper grocery bag on your dining room floor. And at one point, Tiggy, in fear, went to go hide in the bag. And she goes running across the kitchen floor, and she dives into the bag. And she's in there for a minute or two. And I am sitting on the couch looking at this from across the room. And I have a perfect side view. So it's perfectly perpendicular to me. So I can't see in it at all. I can just see the side of it. And I see Snork's head, I see Tiggy's head poke out. And she looks around. She looks to her left. She looks to her right. She's takes like one step out. She's very concerned that at any moment she's going to be attacked. Meanwhile, 1 foot above her head.
Yes.
On the dining room chair, Runty is sitting there, perched on the side, looking down at his prey like Batman.
Yep.
And sure enough.
Did he pounce?
He did.
His cat. The game they did earlier today was Tiggy got in the bag, and the runt would just kind of play soccer with paper, and when she got too close to the front of the bag, bam! Out jumped Tiggy, and this runt jumped 10 feet in the air and took off. And then Snork would just hide in the bag and be really quiet. And she's very patient. She would just sit in this bag for like 4 or 5 minutes, you know, at a time. And very, very quiet, not moving. And sure enough, that runt would get right in front of the bag again. And bam! She'd jump out, and the runt would jump in the air and run away. And that was actually kind of endearing. They weren't fighting. They were just kind of playing. But they certainly weren't playing that same game tonight. The runt was giving chase. Chase Tiggy upstairs, chase around the corner. I never see anything like this because Tiggy is always the attacker. And here she's become the defender. And she's defending herself against a minuscule cat. If this cat is 3 pounds, yeah, I'd be shocked. It's tiny. A tiny, tiny little beast. But, yeah.
The other great moment was when he was running across the kitchen floor and he didn't.
Well, before you tell the story, let me tell you why he was running across the kitchen floor.
All right.
Because his cat jumped up on the table, and the cats aren't allowed on the table. So Whitney's got this little spray bottle, and she gives them a little spray if they get on the table and they jump off the table. So we've never sprayed this cat before. So the cat's on the table, and it's right by the edge of the table, and she gets a spray bottle, and she gives it a little spray, and instead of jumping off the table, the cat leaps straight up in the air and lands back in the same spot.
I actually did see this.
Yes.
The best one was at one point, it didn't really jump. Its front legs jumped.
Yes.
But its back legs stayed on the ground.
Yeah.
Back feet.
She sprayed it, and it leaped in the air and landed in the same spot. She sprayed it again, it leaped in the air and landed in the same spot. Sprayed it again, leaped in the air and landed in the same spot. Like 5 times in a row. And it's like, cat, get off the table. Move from the position you're in if you want this uncomfortable experience to stop happening to you. And it just kept jumping up and down and landing in the same spot. And then finally it like slipped and fell off the table, and that's when it took off.
Yeah.
And then what happened?
Well, it's running, as cats do, and then I'm still not certain how this happened, but a four-legged animal, while running, managed to lose its balance and fall over.
It happened because we have hardwood floors.
No. No, I've seen the cats when they try to change direction and they stick their claws out and you have a hardwood floor and it slips, This cat didn't slip, Brian. This cat fell.
Well, it's little.
It is little.
It hasn't learned how to live yet.
It just tipped over onto its side.
Yeah. So there you go, everybody. That's the latest on the cats. And I don't have anything more to say. Hopefully I come home after this excursion and...
They remember you.
Yeah, they'll remember me. The two existing cats are like, because the new one is here, they're bonding.
I see.
Like, I catch them all the time sleeping together on a different place. They sleep on your bed, they sleep here, they sleep there, always together. Like, they're watching each other's backs. It's actually kind of cute, but... Anyway, let's get moving here. I'm going to ignore SmackDown since it's long past history, but I will say... The video is up on the front page, and you should go out of your way to watch the Sheamus Chris Jericho main event.
Fuck yes.
Very, very good match. And if there's anything else that you feel is very important to discuss here on the program, Vinny, speak now or forever hold your peace.
They've started with this show doing the tout videos. And between this and the pay-per-view and Raw, I will say that so far these have been far less embarrassing than I would have guessed. They have been fine, with one exception. There's a segment of these short little videos with fans talking about their favorite moments in the history of Monday Night Raw. Steve Austin soaking the McMahons with a beer truck.
Mm-hmm.
The Rock's prayer for Billy Gunn, which is, in fact, an awesome moment, and you should all go YouTube that if you haven't seen it before. The time Shawn Michaels came back, and the one guy said his favorite moment... in Monday Night Raw, ever, was when Vince McMahon was revealed to be the higher power.
Yeah.
That was the best thing he ever saw.
Yep.
I can't even say more. I was just stunned. My world stopped.
I have thought of this for a long time when... I'll just give an example. Because the person himself was stunned. I mentioned this a few days ago. There is an article about Jack Swagger being chosen by a little Make-A-Wish girl. And they interview Swagger, and he is absolutely gobsmacked that someone chose him.
Yeah.
He cannot believe that this is true. And he actually goes there and realizes that, in fact, of all the wrestlers in the WWE, she chose him. And he is touched, and he is shocked, and then, of course, at the end, he goes, now I want to break John Cena's record of 300. And I was like, well, it's good to have goals.
Take your time.
But the point is, everybody has a favorite wrestler, and you always hear the weirdest people. This guy's favorite wrestler is Drew McIntyre. You know what I mean? The guy that brings a Drew McIntyre sign to SmackDown.
Yeah.
It's like, of all the wrestlers in the whole world, your favorite wrestler is Jack Swagger.
See, at least with Jack, I am assuming she's a fan of the Oklahoma wrestling team.
I see.
That's the most logical explanation I have.
Well, I don't... She would have asked for Jim Ross.
Maybe she would have.
Anyway, the point is... I don't doubt anything like this anymore because I've seen too many people that it's like, who's your favorite wrestler in the world? And they say like, Paul Ellering. It's like, Paul Ellering? Of any wrestler in history, you chose Paul Ellering? But to each their own, Vinny. So I'm sure that guy's favorite moment was, in fact, when Vince McMahon was revealed to be the higher power. Why? I have absolutely no idea. I don't even bother trying to consider this. But something made that his favorite moment ever. So good for him.
That's true. If it made him happy, then good for him. What else here? Remember when they banned the belly-to-belly suplex by Kurt Angle?
Mm-hmm.
Ryback is doing it now.
Oh, God.
Ryback!
Yeah.
I don't think I need to explain this one anymore. And yeah, the main event was freaking awesome. Sheamus and Jericho had a hell of a match. Sheamus and Alberto had a hell of a match in the pay-per-view. There was that streak about a month ago when Sheamus had the best match in every show for like 6 shows in a row. Sheamus is awesome.
Well, good, because they expect him to be the next John Cena.
Good!
I don't know about that one. But hey, There are worse choices.
I don't know if he will be as successful as Cena, but I have no problem watching him having event matches. I'm happy about this.
Let's jump to the pay-per-view.
Pay-per-view was good. It was not as good as last year's show, which was one of the best shows of all time I've ever seen. I got there late.
Did you go back and watch this match?
I went back and watched the first two matches. The SmackDown match and the Alberto Sheamus match. SmackDown match, the SmackDown ladder match had a lot of insanity. A couple of moves got fucked up. And then it was basically guys just... It was funny because I was watching it with Craig, who had seen it before. And Tyson and Christian and someone else, they were like all on a ladder. Then the ladder got tipped over. And I've seen a lot of these matches. I've seen a lot of guys do this and very stupid, terrible things happen. And in this one, two of the guys just necked themselves on the top rope. And Tyson managed to like land on his feet and then roll through the ropes to the floor. It was the safest version of this I've ever seen. And I mentioned this. And Craig just said, oh, don't worry.
Yes.
He was correct. They proceeded to kill themselves a lot. I can't believe Christian is still doing these. Like, I pictured them coming to Christian and saying, we want to put you in Money in the Bank. And him saying, no, I'm good. I'll challenge for the tag titles or something. I don't need this anymore. But they killed themselves a lot. Everyone except... You know, I was going to say everyone except Santino looked good. But the fact is... I was hoping there'd be a spot where he cobra'd the ladder and it fell over. But there was a bit at the end, not the bit where he was scared of heights. I thought that was just goofy. But there was a point where he was climbing the ladder and about to grab the briefcase and somebody cut him off. And he managed to slide down the ladder while hitting his face in every rung.
Yes.
That is talent. That was tremendous talent.
Somebody else did that in the main event one.
I didn't notice
that.
I think
it might have been Miz of all people. He didn't do it as well as...
Clearly not.
Yes.
Clearly not, because I don't remember it. But, yeah. It was a large collection of insanity. And then finally, Dolph Ziggler won, which I think we'd all agree is probably the best choice. And there was a large pro-Dolph contingent in the crowd. And this was a hell of a match.
I am still... the more I think about it, the more appalled I am at the spot where Lord Tensai beeled him over the table. Because I watch it over and over because someone on the board has it for their, in fact, a couple of people probably do, is their signature. And what in the hell was he thinking?
Well, he was thinking it would be cool if I flew through the air and landed upside down in this announcer's chair.
Luckily, it came off perfectly, which I'm sure was his plan. But it's one of those matches, or one of those spots. Like, I remember... there was an Ultimate X, and Chris Daniels is on one of the lighting rigs or whatever, one of the support deals. Support structure, whatever. And he leaps, and he lands in the middle of the X, like holding on with just his armpits. And I just remember watching that and going, dude, yes, that is exactly what you wanted to do, and you pulled it off perfectly, but... If you would have messed that up, you'd be dead. Because your legs would have kept going because you tried to grab the ropes. And that's what happened. His legs kept going. Luckily, he held on. But if he had not held on, his legs would have kept going and his upper body would have started going down. And he would have fallen all the way from the X onto his head. He would have died. That was like the stupidest spot I ever saw, was that spot where he leaped to the middle of the X. And in this one here, it's like, yeah, you pulled it off perfectly, but you told this guy to beel you over the announce table so that you would land upside down in a leather announcer's chair and then bump off and land on your face, okay? One thing went wrong. You go a little to the right, you go a little to the left. You could have killed yourself here. That, to me, was like the absolute dumbest spot of the entire Money in the Bank pay-per-view. That was so dumb. He lived.
That's Dolph Ziggler for you. He does dumb things a lot. So, yeah, that was the opener.
I will say one more thing, too, about... this is about AJ Styles. I remember, like, 5 years ago, AJ was taking all these stupid bumps. Like, he'd take a power bomb into the metal guardrail, or... It's all sorts of crazy things he'd do, and it's like, dude... You are going to be handicapped by age 30. You will not be able to walk. And as it turns out, AJ is still walking and having great matches. Now, he has admitted that his body is really starting to feel the wear and tear of all of this, and he thinks he's got about 5 years left. But the point is, he's made it to 35, actually. And I'm sure that there's a very good chance that Dolph Ziggler is going to make it to 35, and he'll be walking and doing matches and probably having great matches at 35. But there's still no reason to take this chance. You know, yeah, I could be wrong, but why risk it? Why risk killing yourself? If you're a good worker, you can get over without taking a flip bump over the announce table and landing upside down in a chair and landing on your face. I'm positive of this, because I've seen a lot of great workers that have never done that spot ever. So, Dolph, please protect yourself at all times.
That was followed by the World Heavyweight Championship match between Sheamus and Alberto. As noted in my SmackDown review, I thought this was an excellent, excellent match. It was a little slow in the middle, but that was kind of the point. So, when Sheamus made his comeback, everyone would get into it. Frankly, not as good as the Jericho match, but a hell of a match. And the other thing I love about Sheamus' matches is he doesn't do the Kurt Angle thing where everyone has to kick out of every move. He hits the white noise, he hits the bro kick, you stay down.
Well, that's a Triple H gimmick.
Good!
He's got a finish that everyone kicks out of, or no one kicks out of, and beats everybody. And he makes sure to hit someone with it on every show.
Great!
Yeah.
I endorse this. I think I got there in the middle of the tag match, and I did not go back and watch it. There was a tag match with the Primetime Players and a babyface team with Kofi and Tooth on commentary.
And a babyface team?
I don't even remember who it was.
It was Primo and Epico, who actually were awesome in this match.
That does not surprise me. But yeah, this is not important enough for me to go back and watch. I'm sure it was fine. So, for me, the pay-per-view started with Daniel Bryan versus CM Punk. This was, surprise, surprise, a really good match. Particularly when the special guest ref nonsense was not going on. And they did their best with it. There was the spot where both men were down, and she just brought a chair into the ring and put it in the middle, so they had to scramble for it. That was cute. But by and large, it was a good match that was, I don't want to say ruined, but it would have been better if you just had these two guys fighting.
Anything else?
CM Punk won. He's still the champion.
What did you think of the AJ deal, Vinny? Let's have some analysis.
The AJ deal.
Yeah.
I think I just said it
was. What was the point of it?
To get AJ on the pay-per-view.
So when you watched the match, what was the...
What did I personally get out of it?
Yes.
Nothing.
What story were they trying to tell with AJ?
That she is crazy.
Hmm.
Are you asking these rhetorically?
No.
Or...
Because I explained on Sunday that I was infuriated with the idea that they expressed on commentary that AJ was upset because the finish was taken out of her hands.
Mm.
And I asked the question, what do you mean the finish was taken out of her hands? She was the referee. Why did she just not count? And this resulted in all sorts of people on our board and on my Facebook and on Twitter attempting to explain to me the complex psychology behind this storyline. Why AJ did this. Why she counted. Why she tried to screw both of them but still counted in the end, and then why she felt bad afterwards. And all sorts of explanations. She was upset that she wasn't the center of attention, this and that. And the point of this is, on Raw Monday, what was the follow-up to all of this?
Daniel Bryan wants to marry her.
And what did CM Punk have to say about AJ?
You know, I don't think anything. But I miss, let me double-check here. Let's see. Find?
At the end
Punk.
Of the day, in fact, there was absolutely no payoff to this AJ angle. None. All those weeks, and I'm not even saying that I wanted her to screw both either guy or both guys or one guy or whatever. But they built this up forever, and in the end, they didn't pay it off at all. Which actually does kind of infuriate me, because if you're not going to pay it off, why bother even putting her in the match as the referee? Why not just let them have a great match? The only thing she did was stand in the way of one chair and stand on one kendo stick.
Yeah.
Which Daniel Bryan was unable to lift up. And she was just, like, there all the time.
Yeah.
So why did you need her in there? Because it's not like anything that happened in this match led to anything on Raw. Daniel Bryan wants to marry her now. I don't even know why.
I don't either. I just don't care. It's Raw, dude. They do stupid shit. All I know is whenever... It seems like whenever someone gets introduced as a special guest ref, 9 times out of 10, I think, damn it, and then the crowd will go, yay. So for some reason, wrestling fans like special guest referees. I don't know why. I don't have any answer as to why. I see no upside. All right, back to the pay-per-view then. We had... Where am I? Oh, Ryback. This is the point... Actually, it's the next match where I had that thought. I'll get to that later. Ryback wrestled Tyler Rex and Curt Hawkins, and they got the heat on him.
On Ryback.
We had to watch Ryback sell.
Yeah.
He sucks at it.
Yeah.
He's very, very bad, everyone. They wrestled a while. Ryback pinned them. Life goes on.
Ryback obviously needs to learn how to sell, because if they want him to be someone, he better learn how to do this and quick.
Mm-hmm.
You don't do this on pay-per-view.
He's doing house shows, isn't he?
Have Ryback sell on the house shows.
That makes more sense.
Have him work with William Regal or someone. Actually, that's poor Regal would quit first. But find a guy that knows how to work, that can teach him how to work and sell on the house shows. Putting him on pay-per-view and having him sell for Tyler Rex and Curt Hawkins, I mean, that undid a lot of the... I don't know. I guess they still chanted for him on Monday night and everything like that, but that's probably... More that nobody that was there Monday actually watched the pay-per-view. But anybody that watched this pay-per-view, I feel, watched that match, and Ryback is like, I don't know. That killed his aura right there.
Yeah. So then we had a random six-woman match. Layla and Caitlyn and Tamina versus Natalya and Beth and Eve. This is where it occurred to me, Jesus Christ, this company can't fill a 3-hour pay-per-view. And they're going to try to fill a 3-hour Raw every week.
Uh-huh.
This is going to suck.
Took you this long to figure that out?
I mean, I realized it, but this, it was so painfully clear. This is on pay-per-view.
Yeah.
A random, pointless six-woman. Here's my entire match review in my notes. Good girls win.
That about covers it.
I see nothing else to add.
That about covers it.
And then we have what turned out to be the main event. A 5-man... ladder match for the WWE title. Kane, Cena, Miz, Big Show, and Jericho. Big Show was awesome in this match. Just he's taking a bump over the top rope and then came back and firing around with shoulder blocks and killing everyone. He caught Kane and slammed him down. Finally, everyone had to gang up on him. Everyone hit a big move. Cena FU'd him through the announce table and he threw this giant through the air. He's a big, strong man. So, Kane, who we were watching this and talking about how amazing it is, how long he's been around. He's been a top WWE guy now for 15 years or more.
I want to say one thing about Cena's FU, though.
All right.
As impressive as it was, and I'm not saying that it was not impressive, or that if I wanted to, I could FU the Big Show through a table, because I couldn't. But I would bet that John Cena does reps squatting over 500 pounds. And that's dead weight for reps. So really, he took a guy that weighed 420 pounds, and he did a quarter of a squat. And the other guy did a flip. I think that Cena just does a really, really good job when he gets a giant up for the FU of making it look like it's a superhuman effort. But John Cena is so strong. That while a human is a little more unwieldy than a bar, I would bet if he wanted to, he could F you Big Show 10 times in a row through a table.
Well, it's maybe we'll find out sometime.
It's an illusion.
They are professionals and good at what they do. So we're talking about Kane. how amazing it is. He's been around so long and active for so long at his size. And then he starts taking bumps onto ladders.
What a fool.
Just trying to, and it's, I just finished one of Foley's books, and every time you read someone talk about what Kane's like, they talk about how well-read he is and one of the smarter guys around. He's falling on a ladder for no reason.
Yeah.
It's not going to help his career at all. So then, shortly thereafter, Cena lays out two guys and hits a double five-knuckle shuffle. It's got a much louder pop than guys falling onto ladders.
Yeah.
There is a lesson to be learned here.
I actually predicted that this would be a really good match. A lot of people thought that the SmackDown match with all the bumpers and flyers was going to be great, and this match would be so-so. But I just knew that everybody was a veteran. Everybody, for the most part, was a good worker. And I knew they'd be able to put together a good... I was not expecting Kane to take suplexes on ladders. I will say that. But they had enough smoke and mirrors and psychology that this was a hell of a match.
This was, in fact, a hell of a match. Big Show eventually took everyone out again. He's still the unstoppable monster giant. He tried to climb a few ladders. Didn't work. So he retrieved his super ladder that he had from Money in the Bank. I guess it was last year. And he set the giant ladder up under the thing. And everyone had to put on a mad scramble for the briefcase. Jericho at one point was hanging from the chain, swinging around in the air. That was funny. And then Cena's up there with the Big Show, and he's bonking it with a briefcase, and the handle of the briefcase breaks, and Cena wins. That was the end of the show. So we had last year, between the two ladder matches and Punk and Cena and Christian and Orton, I had four matches at 4 stars or higher.
This was not that good.
No, but I had 4 matches, I think, at 3 stars or higher. Mm-hmm. That's pretty good.
That's a good show. I very much enjoyed this show. And I was happy that when John Cena won, he celebrated like it was the happiest day of his life. Because usually John Cena's gimmick is he doesn't care about anything. But my God, did he care that he won this suitcase.
That is true. That is true. And in fact, when I was over at Craig's the next night watching what I hadn't seen, we finished up right as Raw was starting. And they put up, their Cena's big announcement or whatever the graphic is. And it's the image of him with a briefcase in his hands and the biggest smile you ever saw. And we watched this, and then I realized, this is not a still shot. It was in slow motion. But he held that big, giant grin for a long time.
He's very happy.
He was happy.
He was a Money in the Bank winner.
Yeah.
All right, I got a song, but I'm waiting till the end.
All right.
Because it's a very special song.
Well, we could get there soon.
So let's get into Raw.
Raw was live from Las Vegas. Great city. So Punk comes out, says it was in this town. He gave his pipe bomb speech. And how the 1,000...
Was it really in Las Vegas that happened?
I don't know. The crowd reacted. I assume he would not lie. Well, he may have lied, but I'm sure if this had been a lie, a lot of nerds all across the internet would have let us all know by now. Brian is looking it up, everyone. So he pointed out that on the first episode of Monday Night Raw...
I didn't think that he actually said it was... I think what he was saying was it was on the show after Money in the Bank. Not that it was in this building.
Well, that would not make sense because it was the show leading up to Money in the Bank when he gave a speech.
That's right.
Uh-huh.
Hmm.
Anyway, he pointed out how a guy like him never would have been WWE champion when Raw first started. That is true. Big Show interrupted. And back and forth for a bit. Show threatened to destroy... They were already booked at a match for the night. So with the match already booked, they had to come out and try to build heat for it. So Show threatened basically to destroy him and leave Punk vulnerable. And then Cena would cash in his Money in the Bank shot and Punk would be screwed. And as he said this, Punk just kind of sulked like, fuck, he might be right. They said you could go to the website and vote on whether the U.S., Intercontinental, or the Divas title should be defended next week. Like anyone would care. And then just to point out how not important and not special title matches are, we had a tag team title match. Kofi and Truth versus the Primetime Players. The best thing about AEW's gimmick with the live the house mic is when, like, Darren Young is on the mat and Truth comes off the ropes and starts to dance before he hits an elbow. And as he's dancing, AW is just shouting at his man to move! Move out of the way!
In fact, it was Las Vegas. How about that? June 27, 2011, live from Las Vegas.
Yep.
How about that? All so, right, well, there you go.
Darren Young did not move out of the way, and Truth leg dropped him. So they had a long match, went through a commercial break, and finally, AW tried to distract the ref so his men could cheat. It backfired. Both babyfaces hit their finishers, one of which is apparently called the Little Jimmy.
Yeah.
That's unfortunate. Young got pinned. So does this mean they're still the number one contenders?
They should have claimed that. We're still the number one contenders. That should be their gimmick. That should be like their team name. The number one contenders. And they always claim they're the number one contenders for the titles, even though they never are.
I actually had the idea that you need to have a really, really scary champion. It wouldn't really matter if it was a face or a heel, but then you'd have a chicken shit heel who was competing to win the number one contender spot. And he was very happy when he won, but then he realized he would have to wrestle the champion. He would just never accept his match. He would just call himself the number one contender forever and never actually get his title shot.
Hmm. I like my idea better.
Of course you do.
The number one contenders. That plays into the storyline. I mean, they lost a match at the pay-per-view.
I agree.
And somehow they were still considered the number one contenders.
Oh, I agree.
Forget what they said about themselves. Somebody said, you're right! In storyline.
Yeah. So, Brian and AJ had a meeting backstage.
It wouldn't make sense, by the way, if they would have actually beaten Truth and Kofi so that you actually already had a new set of number one contenders because they'd beaten these men at the pay-per-view. I realize this is all just too simplistic for the current audience, but it makes sense to me.
I've just given up. I've just given up on this ever making sense again. Brian and AJ had a meeting backstage. He tried to apologize. Eve interrupted, and because Brian had walked out on her last week, tonight she would get to pick a partner. She would get to pick a partner to face Brian and AJ. And Brian had more to say, but he said he would wait until after they won. We had Alberto versus Zack Ryder. Del Rio was pissed because he lost his title match in the pay-per-view, so he came out and tapped him out with the armbar in under a minute. Went to put it back on after the match. Rey Mysterio made his big return. Alberto looked like he had seen a ghost. Rey ran wild, hit a 619. Alberto bailed, and Rey basked in the fans' cheers for a while. We had Heath Slater's favorite Raw moments. It was all the time he had been beaten up by an old guy.
This is actually awesome.
Then we had Heath Slater versus Rikishi. Yes, Rikishi. He was fatter than ever, and also the whitest Samoan I've ever seen. This was the entire match. He had a super kick. He hit the stink face. He hit the Samoan spike in a tribute to Umaga. He hit the bonsai drop in a tribute to Yokozuna, and he won. And then he gets ready to start dancing, and the lights go out, and they come back on, and his twin sons, Jimmy and Jay, are in the ring, and they all dance together. This is actually really sweet. This was a great little family reunion moment on television, and it was awesome.
I was offended by how pale Rikishi was. When you have an ass like that, you must get a tan. Otherwise, I think you should be incarcerated.
I'm just stunned. He's
Samoan.
He lives
in Vegas.
He lives in Vegas?
Yeah.
I believe it's sunny there often.
No lack of sun.
Yeah. You'd have to work to be this pale. Get his skin bleached.
Well, where would he be tanning his ass? Really?
He doesn't have a backyard?
He goes out in his backyard and sits out there in his thong.
Why not?
Because that's disgusting. And if he were my neighbor, I would call the police. Or the homeowners association.
I'm sure he has a fence.
Tell him to cover his ass, please.
We now need to get him on the show.
When, why would he tan his ass anyway? When's he walking around in a thong?
Apparently.
It's not like he's on national television every week.
Clearly he was not prepared for this show. Nor did he go get a spray tan.
He wouldn't have fit in the booth.
That's true.
Or they'd charge him double.
So we had Eve and Miz versus Daniel Bryan and AJ. Brian was over. What the hell happened here? AJ mistook the ref.
Small package gimmick. The unbreakable small package when you turn it over.
I did know here in my notes that a lot happened. So, yes, the point is that Eve hooked a small package, but Brian turned the package over. So AJ got the win with the world's greatest small package. They were very happy that they won. And then more importantly, Brian decided that now was the time that he admitted it last week when he proposed to AJ. It was only because he wanted to be champion. This time is because he just wanted to be married to her. So he got down on one knee. Fans were booing loudly. He put a ring on her finger and she cried a little. Then she smiled a little and she finally said yes. Everyone booed. They spent more time kissing than they did in their actual wrestling match. And then they went yes together. He had the historic moment of Rock throwing Steve Austin and his belt off a bridge.
I'm actually still baffled that when they wrote the script for this show, they thought that when he asked her to marry him, the fans would chant, yes! And they didn't.
I don't know.
And not even in hindsight, but in foresight, the entire storyline has been that he is attempting to use her. So now they're expecting that all of a sudden the audience is going to believe that everything has changed. You know what I mean? Like, nobody trusted Daniel Bryan in the crowd.
No.
And why should they? I don't know.
I mean, nobody trusted AJ either.
I think the writers just kind of think, well, we'll make him believe him.
That failed.
You failed.
I believe that part there, you're right. They announced that, in fact, the wedding would be next week in the ring. And they talked about how nothing ever goes wrong at wrestling weddings. And I just thought of all the wacky weddings we've seen. Edge, Kane, Teddy Long. And if you told me 5 years ago that Bryan Danielson would be doing an in-ring wedding on the most heavily promoted Monday Night Raw in years, that would have been a surprise.
Mm-hmm.
That would have been a surprise.
1 year ago.
That's a good point. Ryback came out to wrestle Jack Swagger. Match never got going. Ryback hit the ring. Swagger hit it like a knee to the head. Immediately hit a Dr. Bomb and a Vader Bomb. Then they just kept on wrestling. And Ryback hit a triple power bomb, actually, which is ridiculously impressive.
And well, it was, but Swagger got lower and lower each time. And
yeah?
The fans noticed.
I see. So Swagger left, but not really a match. The crowd did chant "Feed me more" with Ryback.
That was good.
That's very good. So Dolph came out for a promo. He said that he had won Money in the Bank, so he would go on to be the next world champion. He would be the greatest champion in company history. Started listing all the guys he'd be better than, and as he read off each name, Vicky repeated the name. Finally, Jericho interrupted. He just got in Dolph's face. Dolph ran him down for never winning anything and coasting on past accomplishments. Said he had lost his touch about 4 dozen times. And then finally just hit Jericho finally hit a code breaker and left. And apparently he's a babyface now. They showed the Vegas Strip all lit up. I had to work a lot in Vegas this year. I never did get to walk the Strip. This made me sad.
Oh, Christ. You wouldn't be saying that if you did walk the Strip. I walked the entire length of the Strip practically. I think 3 times.
Yeah.
I never need to do it again. It sounds like such a great idea at the beginning. It's like, I think we had to go to, I forget where George was at. He was at the, what the hell was he at? It was a ways down there, I forget. Him and his wife were there, and it was like, we could take a cab, or, hey, why don't we walk? And then by like, 80% of the way there, I need to bring better shoes. That's the key.
I
was wearing sandals. Jesus sandals to make things even worse. And God forbid, my body was aching. And then I did the same thing after all I can eat meat at Samba's. It was like, we should walk this off. Let's walk back.
Where is Samba's again?
Way the hell down at like the Bellagio or something.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
or the
probably,
Mirage, I think.
That is probably a good 2 mile walk.
Holy God Almighty. Yeah. The Strip is, it looks really beautiful from the sky.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't look so beautiful from the ground.
We had more fan favorite Raw moments. Steve Austin destroying Vince's car with cement. That was a good one. Bret Hart reuniting with Shawn Michaels. JTG got new gear, so Brodus Clay killed him.
That's why.
That may not have been why, but that's what happened. They had Donald Trump's favorite Raw moment was Vince showing up on Raw bald. They actually showed Bobby Lashley on television. I was surprised. Then we had the main event, CM Punk versus The Big Show, in a very good match.
Yeah.
This company had a good week. This is, I know this is hard to believe, but Big Show's a giant, and so he didn't fall down for 10, 12 minutes.
I greatly enjoyed this match, until the finish.
Well, of course.
That's actually 2 weeks in a row we've had a god-awful main event finish. Remember last week, a dude pulled another dude out of the ring after
that,
a three commercial
break?
That
was worse. That was worse. I understand, Big Show shoved the ref down. That should be a disqualification. It's stupid they booked it that way, but at least that DQ makes sense. Last week's show was disqualified for breaking up a pin. That was stupid. So, yes, Show finally missed a charge and fell down. Punk had his one chance to win. He hit a big elbow. Show did a power kick out, and then Show just decided to kill him and shove the ref down and get DQ'd. He suddenly didn't care about winning anymore. So that was annoying. So he beat up Punk for a while, and Cena storms out with a briefcase, and Show bails, and everyone thinks Cena's about to cash in and beat Punk and get his belt back. But no! He's a Boy Scout. He's going to give Punk a week to recover, a week to prepare for his match. He's going to cash in his contract next week on the 1,000th show. And then he hit Show with a briefcase, and he and Punk had a stare down, and that was it. This is the best Raw in a long time.
I realize that now that I've said this on three straight shows, with each passing show, the likelihood of this not occurring gets greater. But I am absolutely goddamn certain at this point that CM Punk is turning heel next Monday.
That's not impossible.
Positive. Because if you look at what they did on Sunday and what they did on Monday, on both shows, a heel was pointing out to CM Punk that, in fact, you're the champion, but you're second fiddle. And you're always second fiddle. They didn't mention his name Sunday, but Big Show was making it pretty clear on Monday that John Cena is the main guy, and you're number two, and no one respects you. And it makes perfect sense.
Yes.
For next week, when John Cena is trying to cash in that briefcase, not only will CM Punk be turning heel in whatever way he turns heel, but the fact that he's most likely going to screw John Cena out of his championship match so that John Cena will be the first man in history to unsuccessfully cash in his briefcase. And I was thinking about it, too. I was, because people kept asking me. Somebody asked me on yesterday, actually. They said, what are the chances that John Cena is the first guy to cash in and fail? And my immediate reaction was, that's impossible. There's zero chance of that happening. Because my theory was always that if the first guy that cashes in and fails, he's a fool for life. Unless it's a guy like CM Punk as a heel who has already successfully won and cashed in twice. So if he tries a third time and fails, yeah, he's the first guy, but guess what? He won it twice, and he cashed it in twice successfully. It ain't going to kill the guy. It'd kill a guy like Dolph Ziggler. It ain't going to kill CM Punk. But you know else who it would not kill? Is John Cena. If John Cena, he doesn't try to surprise cash it in. He gives the man a week notice. They go in there for a match. And if CM Punk screws him, and John Cena suddenly becomes the first man in history to have not successfully cashed it in, CM Punk should get tremendous heat for this from the anti-John Cena folks, or from the pro-John Cena folks. And you'd have a feud all summer, heel CM Punk with a new pipe bomb, I'm sure, and babyface John Cena, and the dueling chance would be vociferous for this feud. So they've been talking about a big angle for the summer, and I think that works better than anything else they could do right now. Because they ain't turning John Cena heel. Ain't happening.
No, they shouldn't. No. That's
and they're turning Jericho babyface. Randy Orton's coming back, unless he comes back as a heel, which he'd like to. But Rey Mysterio is a babyface. Daniel Bryan may be turning babyface. We're very heavy on this babyface side. So CM Punk would be a great heel.
Absolutely. No. Oh, that all makes sense. I was left with this show thinking the main event for SummerSlam would be Cena, Show, and Punk in a three-way, which they could still do. But, no, turning Punk would be... That would make the 1,000th Raw special. It's honestly something he's probably better at anyway. So, no, that would be cool.
And a fan on Monday afternoon, I didn't even think about it at the time, but now I'm looking back and thinking about it. He sent me an email, and all it said was, the subject line was, Heyman Family, and the subject, that was the subject, and the body of the email was simply, Heyman, Lesnar, Punk. That was the entire email. And I was like, huh, that's wacky. And then, like, you know, today, I'm thinking back, and it's like, man, that would be a great heel stable. Paul Heyman, CM Punk, and Brock Lesnar versus John Cena. Brock's obviously busy.
Yeah.
But Heyman and Punk is a fast-talking duo against Superman CM Punk after Punk screws Cena out of his title. He could really do something with that. But anyway, we'll see what they do next week. I don't want to get everybody excited because you know how these things go. But that's my prediction. That's the direction I'd go. So let's play this song here. Since this is conceivably the final show ever, should I be eaten by Bigfoot, or a bear, or a cougar, or Rich, at least we'll end on a fine note.
Do you think George is much more likely to eat you?
That is true.
All right.
But you have to catch me first, and that's unlikely. So let's play this here song. This, I heard it, and it stole my heart. Here we go. It is a three-day excursion.
You're doomed.
I am determined to go for 3 days and see a Sasquatch. Come on, Vinny.
Damn it.
Of course, Richard is going to be the group leader, and he is very large.
Uh-oh.
In the wee hours of the morning, all of a sudden I hear...
Don't go, Vinny. It's scary.
You don't have to outrun Bigfoot, you just have to outrun everyone else.
This is going to be exciting, Vinny.
Bigfoot catches me and eats me.
Don't go, Vinny.
Numerous vocalizations.
No thanks.
I glow.
No thanks.
And late night camp visits.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes.
Oh, no.
All these people are killing each other.
If I find Bigfoot, we will be famous.
I think I heard Godzilla in there somewhere.
Some beast. All right, everybody. It's been real. If all goes well, I'll talk to you again next Tuesday. And if all doesn't, well...
I'll take care of the cats.
Yeah, please take care of the cats.
All right.
Don't take too good a care of my wife, but the cats.
I wasn't going to say anything about that.
Take care of my cats. All right, everybody. We're going to wrap it up, and we'll talk to you soon.
Adios.